Hey, this is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. This week's guest is Dave Durante. Dave is a former elite-level gymnast. He's a multiple-time world team member, an Olympic alternate for the U.S., and he was an assistant coach in 2009 for the Stanford team that won the NCAA championship. He is currently the owner of Power Monkey Fitness, which specializes in teaching gymnastics through online programs as well as camps all around the world. In this show, we talk about the principles and experiences that allowed him to be so successful in his sport as both an athlete and a coach. We talk about the fundamentals of gymnastics, including what he calls the pyramid of gymnastics. And this guy is just such a wealth of knowledge when it comes to not only gymnastics, but what it takes to be successful in any area of your life. I learned a ton from Dave, and I know you will too. Enjoy the show. Hey, this is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. Dave, thank you so much for making time for me today. I'm really excited about this one.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been a long time coming. So I want to start here. I kind of have this belief that the number one characteristic, if I had to say one, the number one characteristic that world champions possess over all others is persistence. And the reason I bring that up is because you were one of the best gymnasts in the entire world at one point. And so in general, everyone has failures, injuries, times that they don't want to train. But world-class performers just get back up over and over and over again. And with that said, in order to have that persistence, there has to be almost an obsession, but at least a deep motivation to continue to improve and achieve at greater and greater levels. So where did that come from for you? Where does that desire to be the best and persist through adversity over a long period of time come from?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. And it's something that I stress a lot. I did a lot while I was competing and still do some talking with like younger kids and like next generation of athletes kind of coming up. And I talk to them a lot about this exact thing, what separates the good from the great in my mind, and what allows people to kind of get to that highest level is performing and doing things when other people would step away. What separates is those bad days when you don't want to be in the gym, and being able to do things when things are easy and when you feel 100%, anybody could do that. Mm-hmm. So the ability to push through, as you're talking about, is such a defining characteristic of excellence. And to me, like personally, how did I come about that in terms of my own personality? I think, you know, it's a very hard thing to kind of pinpoint, but I would say a few things. I'd say one, it's something that I learned at a young age, and it had to do with my lack of high-level talent being surrounded by people who were extremely talented. And to me, I wanted to be as good as them and beat them. And the only way that I saw to be able to get beyond my lack of physical talents was to be able to push beyond what they were doing on a daily basis. So I said, all right, I could see that talent is only going to get me so far, but I can make up that ground by putting in the time, the effort, make the sacrifices that they're not willing to make. And over time, it starts to chip away. You make little by little incremental gains, and over time, those incremental gains turn into something significant. So for me, it was being able to see, okay, I was this far behind this person this previous year, but I was able to make all these changes and put these sacrifices in, and I was able to slowly catch up and creep. And to me, those sacrifices and those days when you don't want to be in the gym are such defining characteristics of people that achieve high levels of not just sport, but anything, that I was able to get a taste of that when I was young, and it kind of became a part of every aspect of my life as I got a little bit older.
That's so interesting. And it's honestly so different than my experience growing up, because I grew up in a tiny town. So what you would call like an extremely small pond, and I was well above average in every sport, average compared to my peers in that community, well above average in every sport that I played. And so I had a very different message growing up. I didn't have to work hard to, you know, be competitive. I didn't have to put in effort. And honestly, until I went to I say this because I'm writing about this as we speak. I didn't really, until I went to drug rehab when I was 17, I never had to work hard for anything in my life, right? Mm-hmm. And so the experience that you had really having to work hard just to keep up with your peers at a young age is a really beneficial thing for anyone to learn. So now that you have a kid, how can you, your kid's going to grow up knowing that her father was one of the best in the world, right? And I think it would be easy to think for her, I probably just have amazing genetics. So what do you tell your kid to let her know that she has to put in the work?
Yeah, well, I think that's something that I think my parents taught me as well. The importance of working hard, the importance of earning everything that you're able to get in life and not expecting anything to be given to you. And I grew up with, you know, parents that were incredibly supportive and at the same time pushed me. You know, they were able to see that, you know, I wanted to do these things, and they assisted me as much as possible, but let me make the mistakes and pick myself up and make sure that I wasn't given anything more than what I earned on my own. And I anticipate, and I very well plan on doing the same thing for my daughter. I want the world for her, and I want her to become great at whatever she decides to do, but I have no intention of trying to give her a free pass. Everything mm-hmm. that she gets, she's going to have to earn and understand the work is what matters. And that's what helped me get to where I am. And I'm going to support her as much as I possibly can, but have her understand that the importance of the work is what really matters.
Right. Now, some people believe that to become world-class at something, and I believe this in most cases, that you have to have a very unbalanced life, right? You have to be so single-minded about this one thing in order to be the best of the best of the best. I think there are some exceptions, but most people have a very unbalanced life and they let a lot of areas of their life kind of go by the wayside. So I'm just curious, like, what was your experience kind of at your peak with that?
Yeah, this is another really good question. I would 100% agree with you. I am a very personality-wise, I'm someone that kind of when I get my mind wrapped around something, I put like everything I have into it. And when I was training, I almost went overboard with it. I would say that when I graduated Stanford and I stuck around for a couple of years while I trained for the 2004 games, which I just missed out on, I was part of the national team during those years and just kind of get my feet wet with Team USA. I went so far with how I was training that I pushed my friends, my family, like everybody off to the side, because I felt like if I put 100% of my energy and time and my soul into my training, that it would basically translate into success. Mm-hmm. And while there was a lot of that happening, I ended up, you know, breaking down because I took it a little bit too far. But I do notice that a lot. And when I moved to the Olympic Training Center, the same thing happened again. I moved to the place where I could surround myself with nothing but training. I would wake up, I'd walk 100 feet to the gym, I'd come back to the cafeteria, I'd take a nap, I'd go back to the gym. Your whole life is surrounded by this idea of trying to achieve greatness. And the U.S. Olympic Committee basically fosters a situation that allows you to do that. Mm-hmm. And I embraced it. Like for me, I had some, you know, relationships, and girls are always interested in like, oh, you know, you're a really high level athlete at first. That's really cool. It's intriguing. And then you have to let them know that, oh, you know what? You're going to take a back seat because my number one priority is going to be training until I'm done with this. Mm-hmm. Family, the same thing. You know, I lived away from my family for almost 20 years and I saw them once, maybe twice a year during some of the holidays, and the rest of the time my family was the gym. And I love the idea of pouring everything I had into the gym. In fact, I enjoyed the training more than the competition. I was the kind of person that enjoyed the process. I loved the grind of the gym. I loved being in there and like sweating and bleeding and being in there every single day and trying to make up that ground, like I talk about on the people that were that much more talented than me. I loved being in there every day. So for me, I enjoyed the process of feeling like when I was done that I had nothing left to give. And that was one thing I wanted to ensure when I hung up my grips for the last time, to say, I have no regrets. I have nothing left I could have given to the sport, that on the day that I retired, that I am absolutely content. And I get, do get that question, like, you know, do you wish you're still competing out there? The Olympics roll around, do you wish you're out there? Absolutely not. Not one bit. I don't have anything left to give the sport other than what I'm giving back now in the form of coaching and helping others. But it definitely came from this mentality of giving your whole being from every phase of your life to it.
I want to put a pin on what you just said about the process. But first, you've achieved more at this point in your life. And I think you're 37.
Yeah, 37.
You've already achieved more than most people achieve in their entire lives. You were an Olympic alternate, multiple-time world team member. You coached Stanford to an NCAA championship your first year as a coach, and you're a very successful entrepreneur. What is the correlation for you of all of those achievements to your overall sense of well-being and happiness?
I think, again, it comes back to like my personality type, where I don't even really consider those things very much anymore. Like, to me, it's always the next thing. And I'm always, and maybe it's detrimental at some point in terms of like me being able to like sit back and say, oh, you know, we've done some pretty interesting things up to this point. But I don't look at it that way. I always look at what's next. I want to be able to leave this world with, you know, a sense of I've made the things and the people around me better. And I really want to try to make a positive impact. And what's funny to me is when I retired and finished up like the coaching that I was doing at the higher level, NCAA level, I really didn't want to be a coach. I wanted to actually get away from the sport. So I moved to Europe for a couple of years and tried to figure out the next phase of what my life was going to be. And it was planned that it was going to be something completely removed from the sport and gymnastics world. And I realized while I was out there that this is where my biggest impact can be made. And being part of Power Monkey and what we're doing with that side of things, I feel like I have so much more to give in terms of helping to build what I love. Mm-hmm. And I love fitness, I love gymnastics, and I love the ability to get someone who didn't grow up with it, that is completely new to my passion, to be able to, for them to be able to find some piece of that similar love. And I want to grow the sport. And for me, with all that other success that I've had in some other areas, it really doesn't matter to me unless it's a vehicle for me to be able to continue to promote and help get the sport to more eyes and to more people and help build what I love.
So going back to this idea of an unbalanced life, being very single-minded, now that you've transitioned out of being an elite athlete, how has that changed in comparison? What's similar, what's different?
Yeah, this is tough. You know, life happens, you know, life happens. I was fortunate to meet, you know, my soulmate, and my wife has been an incredible part of the journey. I really was not capable of having a real relationship while I was training. So I always told myself that I would allow that to happen, allow that to become part of my life once my competition years were over. And she's been an incredible part of this entire journey, being that she works for Power Monkey, and you know, she assists a lot on the gymnastics side. It makes things easier that we actually work together. And you know, the next phase of life has happened too, with me having a daughter now. Finding balance is critical, and it's probably the biggest challenge that I'm finding in this phase of my life, because I have such a personality type that likes to work. I really like have a hard time sitting down. I think that's why I like New York so much, because the pace here fits my personality. And my wife is basically my turn off button. She mm-hmm. allows me to like say, you know what, you've done enough. Let's go for a walk. Let's go hang out. Let's go do some other things so that you can shut your brain off. And it's critical. I mean, it's so important just to be able to reset and regroup, and it makes every phase better because of it. But finding that balance is what I struggle with on a regular basis, because I want to do so much. I feel like, you know, there's not enough time for me to do all the things that I want to do.
100%, man. Couldn't agree more. I heard this really good analogy recently about finding balance in life that really helped me, which was the goal is never to have like an even, a seesaw is what goes up and down, right? It's never to have like an even seesaw where it's all, sure, where it's in complete balance. Life is like a wave, right? There's mm-hmm. always going to be peaks and valleys. And so it just takes being completely engaged and engaged with every area of your life, just paying attention to everything. And when you notice something's getting unbalanced, you give it a little more attention, right? Mm-hmm. And personally, I've never felt completely balanced for more than 24 hours. You know, every now and then I'll feel in complete harmony and then something's out of whack and I've got to give it a little more attention.
Mm-hmm. Like, I agree. I'm the same way. I think, you know, there are just so many phases going on with what we're doing, and the challenges of being a father and a husband definitely are things that I embrace. But I mean, I doubt that you'll find a father or husband out there that earn or a wife for that matter, that will disagree when we talk about it being a challenge and you right. having to really work at making it function correctly.
Right. So let's get back to this idea of the process. So I think another one of the things that makes world-class performers or just really successful people is that the results that they get are a byproduct of the process and executing on that process that they determine for themselves. So is that just another thing that just kind of organically developed, or did someone teach you that?
Yeah, that's actually a good question. I think just a couple of kind of comments on that. One, I think I'd learned that part of being an elite athlete while I was at Stanford, but not until late into my college career. Up in the gym at Stanford, we have a couple phrases. One written on the wall, it just says, "The strength comes in the struggle." I love that phrase. I think it really kind of epitomizes this idea of like pushing through when things are challenging. And the other one is take pride in the process. Take pride in it. Believe in the process. And my coach at Stanford, the one who came in, who's the head coach there now, I still have a very close relationship with him. He basically took me from being a pretty good collegiate athlete to being a national team member and kind of made that jump from a good gymnast in the States into a good gymnast internationally. And he taught me about the process. He taught me about putting in the time in the gym and how that will lead to the success that you're trying to achieve. It doesn't happen the other way around. You can't think about the end result on a daily basis. All you have to think about is what's in front of you on that training day. Mm-hmm. And if I can accomplish this, then I'll move to the next day and accomplish what's in front of me the next day. If you think too far ahead, it's way too cumbersome. It's way too many things to think about. You can only think about this piece by piece, little bits at a time. And from there, things start to develop in terms of the goal that you're trying to achieve. So for me, it was about training correctly in terms of understanding what every day in the gym, what the value is of every day in the gym. And I try so hard to get something positive out of every single day. And so that's one of the things that I really try to get across to other people is even when, and I mean, I'm sure this is for a CrossFit athlete or for any other athletes that are training in a different sport, there's rarely a day where you feel 100%. If it happens, it's kind of a golden opportunity, right? It's more of a play day. Most days, something's going to be off, whether it's a mental challenge, whether it's a physical challenge, whether, you know, there's something kind of going on in your life that is inhibiting you or prohibiting you from kind of creating an optimum training environment. But what that does, it's a mental challenge, but it's also an opportunity to say, if I can get something done on this day, even if it's the smallest change, I know that I can achieve something when I'm not at 100%. You get to a competition setting and you've done that a million times before, something's a little bit off in a competition, you'd be like, I'm ready for this. No matter what is thrown at me, my body, my mind, my spirit is prepared for what's going to happen because I've done this a million times before. So the preparation, the training that goes in every single day and the process that goes along with that understanding of the importance of every day that you go into the gym was taught to me by this coach while I was at Stanford. And it was a fundamental piece in me being able to go from, like I said, a fairly, you know, competent collegiate level athlete to someone who was able to compete at a higher level in the international stage.
Right. That's when it takes training from being like a performance and a competition to an opportunity to learn and grow, right?
Yeah, because a competition setting, if it's done correctly, is just another day in the gym. Mm-hmm. And that's really what you need to get to a point. As an elite level athlete, you have to train like you're competing. And you have to take that opportunity to say, okay, even though there's nobody watching and there's no cameras on and you're not in the, you know, raising your hand in front of a billion people at the Olympic Games, this is an opportunity for me to prepare for that. And if you don't, if you look at a training day as just another day in the gym, you're missing out on an opportunity to prepare yourself for when those lights turn on. And that's a big piece that I didn't learn until later on into my career that I wish I would have learned earlier on.
Right. And anyone listening, one of the coolest, most impactful things for me, because I have no desire to be an elite athlete anymore. This is true for every area of life. Whatever you want to do, this is how you become the best at whatever it is. So instead of thinking I want to be a world-class entrepreneur, what is the process and what are the skills I need to develop to be capable of, you know, owning a world-class company, for instance? Or what skills do I need to possess and hone to be capable of winning a championship? Rather yeah. than I just want to win a championship.
Absolutely. And I'm applying the same principles that I learned while I was an athlete to what I'm doing on the business side now. You know, it doesn't change. You're exactly right. You just have to modify things a little bit to allow for them to be appropriately placed for the environment that you're trying to become, you know, a success at. And it's funny, I'm reading a book right now called Principles by Ray Dalio. I would highly recommend anyone that's looking to become an entrepreneur or high-level athlete to read into it, because it speaks a lot about these exact things. And what I find interesting is that, you know, I can talk a lot about the athletic world, but the things that you learn as an athlete can absolutely be applied to other phases of your life. And I think one of the things that was really telling for me is what I learned in the gym from a young age also helped me achieve success in the classroom too. And that's one of the reasons why I was able to go to a school like Stanford, is because I understood what it meant to put in the time, whether that be in the gym or in my homework and in my classes. And the athletic world prepared me for other phases of my life, essentially.
So in 2009, you transitioned, and correct me if I'm wrong on the date, but I think that's when you transitioned from being an elite athlete to a coach, correct?
Yeah. So I coached a couple of years as a volunteer coach at Stanford 03 and 04 after I graduated, and then moved to the training center. And then after I retired, after Beijing, I came back and I moved right to Stanford in the fall of 2008, right after Beijing.
So in many instances, honestly, I would say most instances, the best of the best athletes end up being terrible coaches, because many of the things that made them so great as an athlete become a real detriment as a coach, such as for instance, you have to be very selfish, or a lot of high level athletes are very selfish with their own time for good reason. Mm-hmm. You were very successful very quickly. So can you talk about your experience with that transition, what the challenges were, and how you were able to be sure. successful?
Yeah, so a couple of things. I want to make sure things are clarified. One, I agree with you 100% that being an elite level athlete does not translate into being an elite coach. But if you do get an elite level athlete who's able to become an elite coach, I think that's really special. Mm-hmm. And that's what I got when I moved to the Olympic Training Center. I went from an amazing coach at Stanford that taught me what it meant to train properly and to take pride in the process, as we talked about. And then I moved to the Olympic Training Center and was coached by a former Soviet world champion, one of the best gymnasts of all time. And he, to me, combined all of those things, being an elite athlete and being an elite coach. And that's special. That is very unique. And what that person has that a coach that doesn't have that background has, the ability to understand what the athlete's going through on a daily basis. He was essentially able to read my mind, which was kind of crazy, in terms of when to push, when to back off. And that only came through knowing what it was like to be an athlete at that level.
Right.
And it's not easy. And I'm not saying that I'm a coach that's capable of that, maybe not yet, but it's something that I have recognized in coaches that have coached me. So while I completely recognize that elite level athletes don't always, or a majority of the time, don't turn into good coaches, when you do find an elite athlete that turns into a quality coach, it's special. And I think it's something that can actually bring the most out of athletes.
Right. Because they can relate. I mean, I draw the similarity to addiction, for instance. A former addict is so much more capable of connecting with someone mm-hmm. that's struggling with addiction, because right. there's that immediate level of trust.
Right. Absolutely. And it's the same thing. You know, it's the same thing. You know, I know that my coaches all understand what it's like to be a gymnast. But the coach who has been in front of that massive crowd, that has had to raise his hand when the pressure was on, he knows what buttons to push in the gym, out of the gym, in competition, to be able to get the most out of you. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was unique. That was special. And it was something that I went through to be able to recognize those differences. It's not taking anything away from those great coaches that were not great athletes. But I'm just saying that I've recognized that there is something just slightly different if you're able to find that really unique. It's kind of like a unicorn, right? It's not very rare to find it.
Right.
The other part of your question having to do with going back to Stanford, I was assistant coach for that team. The head coach was the same coach that had coached me. And we hadn't won a national championship in 14 years. The guys should have won the national championship the previous year in 2008. It was at Stanford. They were the best team in the country by far. And they blew it at NCAA championships. I was there. I flew out to Stanford. It was hosted by Stanford. And our ultimate rival, who is, you know, by far the best team right now in the country, Oklahoma, beat Stanford at a competition that we absolutely should not have lost. And it was like devastating for that team. There were a lot of really, really quality guys that didn't earn a national championship ring because they didn't perform when it mattered. When I was at Stanford, we were in a rebuilding phase, let's say. Right. And we were not very good while I was there. And I always wanted to win a national championship. And so I looked at that transition year while I was leaving the sport and figuring out what I was going to do next as an opportunity to say, I can help this team get over that hump and bring something that they might have been missing in 2008. And everything was in place. You know, the guys were incredibly strong. They were a really, really talented group that had the ability to win whether or not I was there. But I hope that my perspective as an elite athlete, especially coming off of having just competed at a high level, I was able to bring some of that mental side to the guys on the team that was missing. So when we got into a competition and we were competing at NCAAs that year in Minnesota, when, you know, everything was on the line, the guys knew what it meant, knew how to step up rather than shy away from that opportunity. And I feel like that was the last little missing link that I was able to bring in as a former athlete.
Did you ever struggle with the focus no longer being on you, not being in the spotlight? Was there ever any like challenge to your ego?
I don't think so. I never did the sport for the outward success. I always did the sport, and I appreciated the things that came because of the success, but I never did it because of that. I never did it because of the extrinsic value, what you kind of get from competing at a high level. Mm-hmm. Me was more icing on the cake rather than something that I was striving for. For me, it was more about, am I capable of reaching my human potential? Am I capable of going as far as I possibly can with what I've been given from a physical perspective? Mm-hmm. That was what worried me more than whether or not, you know, I was getting accolades for the actual success. And what scared me was saying I could have gotten a little bit more out of myself. And one of my idols in the sport kind of assisted in this thinking. He was one of the hardest workers that has ever come out of this country. His work ethic was kind of legendary in the sport. I still have a very close relationship with him. His name is John Roethlisberger. He's a 3-time Olympian, one of the, you know, the most famous U.S. gymnast to ever come out of this country. He actually owns one of the co-owners of the camp that we host our Power Monkey camp at. So I see him a lot throughout the years. But he was the one that kind of like I wanted to strive to be like in terms of trying to reach your human potential. And that was more important to me than you know, whether or not I was getting the spotlight or, you know, any of that stuff from what that success kind of translated to. I want to show you something really quick just because it's here. Let me see if I can find it. This is on my desk. My desk has turned into like a baby's room, but I at least have this on my desk. So, this is,
so I'm going to describe it 'cause they're not going to see this.
Yeah.
Durante 2009. NCAA championship ring. That's badass.
So this is my ring that we won at Stanford.
That's awesome.
First one that we won in 14 years, and now I'm going to turn it and you're going to see something different.
Oh, shit. It's cut in half.
It's cut in half, yeah. So just a quick little story about that. My brother in the sport, he's as close to me as anybody that I have in this world. He's was on the Stanford team with me. He was on national team with me. He's done everything in the sport with me. And he was on national team. He's very, very good gymnast. He's one of the best gymnasts in the country for a long time. We never won a national championship together, and I always wanted to do it with him. So after we won in 2009, I had the ring cut in half, and I gave him the other half of the ring to basically say, you know, we did this together. Like, me winning in 2009 as part of the coaching staff, it was as much about him being part of it as me. So he has the other half.
That's his so best. Cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So cool, man. So I want to transition a little bit into some more like technical questions.
Sure.
So my listeners have heard some version of this many times, but I really want your perspective. So this community, the functional fitness community, is very, as a whole, very outcome focused rather than process focused, as we were talking about earlier. And people are just in general focused on meeting the minimum range of motion requirements for any given movement, and which I think is a very short-sighted approach. So the example that I always use is the muscle up. And a lot of people think that the best way to do more muscle ups is just to do more muscle ups. So what are your general thoughts on this?
Yeah, I agree that that is the mentality of a lot of people, and it's exactly what we try to teach against in every training session that I have, every class that I teach, every seminar that I teach, every camp that I teach. We try to get people to move away from that mentality as much as possible. You know, the things that we teach, that we preach a lot, one is technique matters. Technique matters in every phase of your life. I don't care if you're trying to learn a muscle up or trying to learn calculus or it doesn't matter to me. You have to understand the basics to be able to do things efficiently, correctly, and for longevity. And the other thing that I always preach is this mentality of never training towards a particular standard. You're setting your foundation around technique and applying that technique to a standard so that you're always training towards the highest level version of a particular movement. So when someone's trying to learn a muscle up, the worst thing that you can do for someone is make them do more muscle-ups if they're having trouble with it. It's a very kind of caveman approach to breaking down movement.
Right, right.
If you really are wanting that person to become better at a particular movement, it's about analyzing. It's about saying, okay, what does this individual need to be able to make this movement better? Is it a mobility issue? Is it a strength issue? Is it something that is more of a mental issue? Every person is slightly different in terms of what is needed to make that movement better. And a good coach will be able to analyze and assess and be able to give them the correct homework to be able to make that better. It's very easy to say, okay, just do more of a particular movement. And when I hear that kind of correction, to me, it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity to be able to say, okay, I think there's something better. I think there's something better that we can allow you to not only be able to do this better from a movement pattern perspective, but also for a longevity perspective. And this is one of the things that I think is really important for your listeners too. And just from a training standpoint, is to understand who the person is that's actually doing the movement. You know, 99%+ of the people that I come across when I'm doing my seminars and when I'm teaching aren't looking to compete at the highest level when it comes to this stuff. They're looking to have a higher quality of life. Mm-hmm. And if your goal is to have a better quality of life, then completion of one movement one time shouldn't be your goal. It should be to understand how to do these things correctly so that 5 years from now, 10 years plus, 20 years from now, you can still do these movements efficiently. You can do it healthy, where your body is stronger and more mobile and better because of it, rather than saying, I completed a movement one time and now I can't do it because something broke down over time. So I am 100% in the same boat as you are in terms of making sure that people understand the importance of technique when it comes to anything that they're trying to learn, not just from the perspective of an athletic skill. And to find someone who can help analyze and break down the specific targeted things that you need to be working on as an individual. That is absolutely critical if you want to be making the right strides forward.
It's so challenging to get this across to people, because for some people, just doing more muscle ups could help them do some more muscle ups, right? But mm-hmm. the way that we teach is you know, say you just do some more, quote unquote, do more muscle ups, and you get to where you can do 8 or 10 muscle ups. If you would slow down and set a wider foundation, your peak might be 20 plus muscle ups, right? Mm-hmm. So by learning how to do things correctly, you're going to improve your peak or you know, what you're capable of, your reach your full potential rather than just do a few more than you're capable of right now.
Right. And that comes back to what I mentioned earlier about not training towards a particular skill. We want to train towards the highest level versions of these things. That's why something like even like a muscle up, I'm always, my first question is, one, are you training the swing? You know, if it's a kipping muscle up, is someone training just the swing? Are you understanding how to maximize the potential of the swing and then applying it to something like the kipping muscle up? And the reason for that is because if you have a good understanding and a really technically sound swing, you can apply it to endless amounts of other movements. And that's the thing that I think most people are missing, is that it's an opportunity to become more proficient with just movement and in general, as opposed to being fixated on just one particular skill. It's limiting your ability to become a better mover, to become a better athlete, and it really will limit your ability to become better at the thing that you're trying to. So we always try to get people to understand, okay, how do we break this down? What are the finer components? Let's set the foundation about building towards the highest level version of all of these movements so we can open up our skill base so that it can be applied to a ton of other things.
Right.
What I was saying, especially in the gymnastics world where it's a little bit, you know, easier to see, because, you know, weightlifting, there are two movements that can be broken down endlessly. On the gymnastics side, we have endless amounts of movements that can be broken down endlessly. The sport is constantly evolving. It's constantly getting harder. The thing that guys are doing at the Olympic Games today, I would never even think about doing.
Right.
And retired from the sport 9 years ago, and I mean, it's mind-blowing where the sport has evolved to. And again, I look at that as an exciting component. I don't look at that as like daunting. I look at it as saying, look what we can potentially do from a movement perspective. Mm-hmm. If you guys set this foundation, it's going to open up so many different avenues into the way that you can move. And that's something that I think we really have to make sure that the population understands. It's not about a particular standard or what you're seeing other athletes do. It's about understanding how to move properly so you can open up the skill base tremendously. And higher level athletes will start to do it. And you're seeing it already with right. things like handstand obstacle courses and people doing back rolls and back uprises and things like that. But those are still just kind of the stepping stones, the baby steps of where we can potentially go if foundations are set correctly.
Right. And what another great like correlation to other areas of life, right?
Yeah.
Our gymnastics coach, Nick, uses this great analogy that we're trying to teach people to be carpenters, not to build a birdhouse, right? So the birdhouse is the muscle up. And if we teach someone how to build a birdhouse, then we give them a plan and they can build a great birdhouse. But then you ask them to build a doghouse, they have no idea. But absolutely. You teach them how to be a carpenter, they can do anything you want.
That's exactly right. I completely agree with that analogy. I think it's the exact approach that we need from more coaches. But I think what ends up getting lost is the difficulty in understanding what those steps are and what the progressions are for people to really appreciate how to move correctly. Mm-hmm. And that's where it's really important on us as coaches who have the technical background to be able to bring that information to more people is critical. And that's why we travel around the world on a regular basis to be able to get more people to understand how to move properly. And that's why we set out programs, and that's why we put out content. And it's not to become more visible just from a vanity standpoint. It really is. And again, that's one of the things I come back to. It's to help the community understand how to move better, what those progressions are supposed to look like so that people can actually apply them. And it comes from the educational aspect. We need more people to be educated on what's smart for your particular athlete, what's the correct way to be approaching these things, as opposed to just saying more is better. It's a very limited way to be thinking. And I think Nick's analogy is a completely appropriate way to be thinking about it.
So you come from what is considered like the artistic gymnastics field. And what you're doing now is teaching a lot of, I'm sure you're teaching a ton of similar things that you learned, but also this new stuff in competitive fitness. Over the past, whatever, 5+ years, what have been some of the biggest things that you've learned or had to change about the way that you were taught versus what these athletes need to be capable of doing now?
Yeah, again, it's a learning process, right? Because functional fitness from a competitive standpoint is relatively new. So you're kind of like learning as you're going along to figure out what's optimal for the athlete from a movement standpoint, from a volume standpoint. But what's been really enlightening to me is to work with other coaches who have been elite in their own respective worlds and to be able to combine our collective knowledge to be able to find out what's optimized for this particular world. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that is most challenging is the amount of things that these athletes are expected to be good at.
Right.
They're expected to be good at so many different things that there's only so many hours in the day. There's only so many things that we can potentially cater to allow them to develop properly. You know, if I took a really high level athlete who, you know, is more of a games competitor that doesn't come from gymnastics and just spent a year on handstands with them, they would become much, much better in handstands, but they would neglect every other aspect that they would need to become capable when it comes to competition setting. So for me, it's understanding how to apply the technique that we teach on a regular basis on the gymnastics world and allow that to fit in with the rest of the way that they train in terms of having to be proficient at so many other movements. Mm-hmm. It's a really significant challenge because, I mean, even on the weightlifting side or on the endurance side or the rowing side, it takes so much to become very, very high level. On a weekly basis, you need to devote, you know, 3-4 days a week on any particular skill or movement if you want to start seeing some significant gains. And sometimes it's difficult to be able to allow that person that much time in so many areas to where they're actually seeing improvements.
Right. Yeah. We made so many big mistakes when we were first starting out. I would create an entire program for someone. And then I would say, Matt Bruce, I want you to put weightlifting here, here, and here. And him coming from a training environment where he spent 4 hours, 5 days a week, right. He gave him 12 hours of weightlifting on top right. of everything else that I was giving him. And Absolutely. then we brought Nick in and he's doing a similar thing with gymnastics. And very quickly we understood this is kind of a new area of strength and conditioning. And we need to have some conversations about how these things are affecting one another.
Without a doubt. And that's, you know, that's kind of that we talk about. It's like a growing process because everything was so new. You know, you're figuring out how those pieces fit together. And same thing that you guys are doing with Brute, we're doing with, you know, Power Monkey. And, you know, it's bringing together these people. And the more conversations that you can have and the more contact you can have with athletes at all levels, the easier it's going to be for the next phase of this to be able to say, we have a template in place. We know what works mm-hmm. for an athlete from, you know, whether they're starting their first day of foundations all the way through to somebody kind of at the peak of the sport to be able to say, this is a plan that's appropriate for where you're at. And you're right. The same thing we went through kind of that kind of building process of understanding, you know, what works and what doesn't work because it was new to all of us. It was new in terms of how our individual backgrounds fit together into one, one pie.
Right. Okay, so picture the CrossFit pyramid, nutrition, metabolic conditioning, gymnastics, weightlifting, sport. If you were to create a pyramid purely for gymnastics, what would that look like?
Yeah, I've done that, and it's a four-phase process, and I think it's absolutely imperative. It's one of the first things that I mention whenever I'm talking to anyone, and the reality is if you don't do it in these four phases in their order, you're going to stunt your growth as an athlete. The first phase is about creation of body shapes. We have to be able to understand how to manipulate our bodies correctly into the correct shapes if we want to be able to apply those shapes to movement. That phase is broken down into two subcomponents being one, more core-centric exercises. A strong core leads to strong movement. And when I talk about the core, it has to do with everything that encompasses the midline, not just what you can see in the mirror. Yes, it's your abs, but it's your hip flexors, it's your obliques, it's your posterior chain. We need everything strong that encompasses that midline. Strong core, strong movement. Part two in that first phase is more mobility and more flexibility. If you do not have enough mobility and flexibility to be able to get into the shapes that we're trying to create, compensations happen. And those compensations lead to unnecessary stress, and that unnecessary stress leads to potential injury. And these are the two phases that most people are missing out on from just kind of a general first athlete kind of guppy coming into the gym. Those are two phases that need to be, or two pieces that need to be done on a daily basis. You need to be working on your core and you need to be working on mobility every day. Doesn't need to be a long time. You know, 10, 15 minutes is fine, but it needs to be something that's part of your routine on a regular basis. Phase two is the boring part, the one that nobody wants to do. Part two is about static holds, controlled movement. This is your isometric. This is your tempo work. This is your pause work. This is your negative work. This is where you build strength. This is where you build stability within your joints. This is where you're able to take those shapes that you've created from phase one and control them. This is a long process. This is gymnastics 101. This is what we do on a regular basis in terms of how we get the strength that we have. Phase three is the sexy part. Phase three is what everybody jumps to right away. This is dynamic action. Everyone wants to use momentum and use a dynamic action to get through a limitation from a strength or mobility standpoint. They want to use that kipping action, that swinging action, to make up for a deficiency in phases one and two. Now, you might be able to do that for a few reps or for a few months or potentially for a few years, but eventually those limitations will start to show themselves. And they'll show themselves not only in inefficiency, but they'll eventually show themselves with wear and tear and injury over time. If you're constantly doing things from a dynamic standpoint without having phases one, two in place, you're limiting your potential for growth and also increases your potential for injury. The last phase is the competitive phase. Phase four is about creation of sequences, complexes, and routines. And this is what you'd see at the Olympic Games. This is what you'd see at the Games. This is what you'd see where a high-level athlete who has phases one, two, three in place compile skills together into something more complex. And that can't happen unless you have phases one, two, three firmly in place. So for me, that process is absolutely critical, something that I work on with my athletes on a regular basis. And a key kind of caveat to this is once you get a good understanding, once you're very mobile and once you have a strong core, those phases are never done. You don't move on to phase two and say, I'm done with phase one, that I've moved on. Right. It becomes incorporated into the next phase. You move on to phase three, now you're doing phase one, two, three together. Yep. You move on to phase four and you work on all of them together. If you were going to an Olympic training center and watch the gymnasts work out, they're stretching, they're doing mobility, they're doing their pause work, they're doing their tempo work. They're not just working on routines. They're not just doing the end result. Mm-hmm. All of those things need to be worked on together, but it has to be in that phase. That's the way that I believe gymnastics movements need to be worked on. And it's kind of the process that I've built with Power Monkey to be able to kind of convey it to people that are new to it.
I love that 1-2-3-4 analogy. It's like, mm-hmm. if you watch the Super Bowl, you're going to watch Tom Brady doing footwork before the game, right? Mm-hmm. Just holding a ball, just doing footwork, because that's just a part of what he does every single day. Yep, it's so absolutely fundamental to the sport that you have to do it every single day.
Yep.
Let's pick out mobility, because I think it's something that so many people struggle with, and it can have such a huge impact on every aspect of their life. So on one hand, we need mobility to achieve, you know, proper range of motion. And at the same time, CrossFit in general, because of the high repetitions, it tends to strengthen and tighten connective tissue. Mm-hmm. So how do you make significant mobility changes and mobility gains while also training really hard using those muscles in a kind of CrossFit environment?
I think the most important part is consistency. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, 100%, doing it on a regular basis. It needs to be something that's implemented into part of your training plan, no matter what athlete you are at what level. It needs to be done on a very regular basis, especially if you're noticing that you're limited in any particular area. It can't be something that's done, you know, haphazardly. It can't be something that's done a couple days a week. the mobility training needs to be something that you actually take on as part of who you are as an athlete. And you'll notice this, I mean, at elite level athletes from majority of sports will work on these base and fundamental things like you talked about with Tom Brady with footwork. Mobility from a gymnastics standpoint is absolutely fundamental from the perspective of there's nothing that we could do at a higher level without it. And I would expect and hope that athletes, you know, games level athletes, things like that, understand that it's a critical component for them to move properly, but it's also as important, if not more important, for the everyday person to be working on a regular basis so that they can move better when they're doing a daily WOD.
All right, I want to finish up with a couple questions about raising kids. So I want to hear your input on putting kids into gymnastics. I've always thought that in general, gymnasts are all around the absolute best athletes on the planet. And I also love how most of them, especially ones that compete at a high level, develop more discipline than other athletes, if you will. At the same time, and I've been the sports performance coach, the strength and conditioning coach for some very high level gymnasts. And so I've seen a lot of them at a high level. And relative to other sports, it seems like there are more neurotic and more stressed out individuals just because of the demands of that sport. So do you think there's a way to mitigate that so if you're going to put your kid into gymnastics, is there a way to mitigate it so that one, you're pushing and challenging and letting them have these great benefits, but also, you know, making sure they're happy and not getting too stressed out?
Yeah, I think this is on the gymnastics side, this is a question that we're struggling with right now to kind of figure out the answer to. I completely agree with you. And I think that one of the factors that plays into it is the age that athletes in the gymnastics world start and peaking age, especially if you look at like the women's gymnastics side of things, they're peaking at such a young age that they're being bombarded with so much training and so much stress from a physical, emotional standpoint that they are having to go through so much compared to their peers that it can be overwhelming. And it's critical on two people's perspective to make sure that they're able to withstand it and become better because of it. One, it's on the parents to make sure that they are there as a support system for the kid. The parent can't be someone that makes the situation tougher or makes the situation harder for them to be able to achieve greatness. The parent needs to be there. And, you know, I've seen both sides of it, but I feel very fortunate to have my parents were always there as a support system. If things weren't going right, they were there to kind of assist and make sure that I had what I needed to be able to work through it. But you need parents that are there to lean on because gymnastics, any sport, anything you go through, you're going to have challenges and you need somebody there to be as a support system, not someone who makes the difficult times harder. And part two, it's imperative on the coach. And this is going to be something that is even more important, especially what's going on in the gymnastics world right now. You need to find a coach who is capable of understanding what an athlete is going through and how to get the most out of them by being positive. And this is one of the things that I mentioned that I learned later on in my career, the importance of getting something positive out of every single day. And if you can have a coach who's able to push you, but make things fun and interesting and, you know, definitely not always easy, because things being easy is a recipe for disaster later in life. Mm-hmm. Understand that there are challenges. It's going to be challenging. It's going to be tough. There are going to be days that you don't want to be in the gym. But the coach is there to assist and not things make things harder, not make things more challenging. They're there to be a support system in the same way the parents are, but it's a different relationship because the parents are outside of the gym and the coach is the one that are dealing it in real time every day in the gym. So I would say that if you're interested in putting your kids in gymnastics, one, it would probably be one of the best things that I would recommend in terms of creating a kid who's going to be able to deal with a lot of the, you know, the stresses that come with things later in life, the discipline you learn, the movement that you learn, the ability to learn things like strength and mobility at a young age are fantastic. But I agree with gymnastics, USA Gymnastics slogan that it's begin here and go anywhere. I don't think that being in gymnastics really means that you need to become a gymnast later in life. I think that it helps translate into anything that you want to go do as an athlete. So I completely think that putting a kid into gymnastics early on is going to help translate into being a better athlete into any other thing. But it's absolutely imperative that the coach and that the parents are there as a support system. They need to be there to help the athlete become better, to push them when it needs to be pushed, but understand that the athlete is going through a ton of stressful components, and to not make things worse or harder, but to be there more as a support system. It's a very challenging thing to do.
And now here's the billion-dollar question, and I'll preface this with, obviously there's no right answer to this question, but for you personally, how do you approach it if your daughter ends up having no interest in gymnastics whatsoever?
I have no problem with that. I think most people would laugh when they hear me say that, thinking that I'm the kind of person that like would push my daughter into gymnastics, considering like I have her hang from the bar and I have her do handstand walks every day, and we work on her mobility, and I do it more as, you know, for fun and things like that. But, you know, I think at a young age, I'm going to put her in gymnastics because I think it allows for her to become more capable with understanding what her body is capable of doing. But I am 100% not a parent. I'm not going to be a parent that forces my kid to do anything. Even if they have talent, even if she is really, you know, has all of the makings of an elite gymnast, but despises it, that's a recipe for disaster later in life. Right. It's a recipe for feeling resentment towards being forced to do something they don't want to do. So it needs to be a combination. You have to want to do it, and you have to have the ability to do it too if you want to achieve high levels of success. But that will not be something that I will make my daughter do it by any means. I'm going to be just content if she wants to be an artist, if she wants to be an accountant, if she wants to do another sport. For me, it has nothing to do with her being a gymnast relative to, you know, what it means to me to have her there doing that sport.
Right. Well, you have a really good, it sounds like you have a good organic approach going on where you're having her practice by holding onto the bar and stuff like that. So when she's old enough to know, she'll already be good at it. And we love to do things that we're good at.
Yeah. And we want to
make it setting fun. Her up. I love it.
We just want to make it fun for her. You know,
totally.
Kids love hanging on bars and flipping and bouncing on trampoline. I mean, when you're a kid, even, you know, the two comments that I get the most that I absolutely love are, I wish my parents would have put me in gymnastics when I was a kid, and I can't wait to put my kids in gymnastics. And to me, that means the sport has some longevity. The sport has some kind of some legs to be able to kind of grow into something more unique into the next phase we're doing here. And I'm going to do the same thing for my kid. I'm going to give them the opportunity to find their potential passion for it. And if it's there, fantastic. I'm going to facilitate it. But if it's not there, then, you know, I have no problem with it.
Awesome, man. So let's wrap it up. Tell me about the app that you guys have created before we get off the show. It's sexy, but what does it do? What can you do with it?
So we have two apps right now. One is just our video database. We have over 1,000 videos that we've shot, and it's continuing to grow. It's a free app, just Power Monkey Fitness, and it's all the videos that we've ever shot in terms of movements, weightlifting, and gymnastics. It's in the palm of your hand. It's a very easy, searchable way to work on the techniques that we believe in on the Power Monkey side. The other one that's relatively new, that just came out a couple of months ago, is our Monkey Method, which is our training platform. And this is essentially programs. The app is free, and the programs on there are subscription-based, so you can purchase them individually. And these are how to develop particular skills, how to become, you know, better at a strict pull-up, or, you know, a muscle-up, strict, kipping, press to handstand, planches, how to become better at the back squat. They are going to be pretty wide-ranging from skill level and also across different modalities. And we're going to be incorporating more programs from some of the high-level coaches that we have at our Power Monkey camp to create the program. So right now we have a majority of them based around the gymnastics side of things. but we're going to be expanding more into the weightlifting side with coaches like Chad Vaughn and Mike Serbis and a lot of the other coaches that we have on our weightlifting staff, and then building into some more of the endurance stuff that we have with some of our endurance coaches out of camp. But it's an incredible resource. It's a very, very unique way to be approaching movement. I would say one last thing on the app is that most people kind of ask, well, what's different about it versus some of the other programs that are out there? And what we've done is we've created from scratch. We did it completely from scratch, which was, as you can imagine, not the easiest thing in the world to do, create an app from scratch and a program completely from scratch. But what it's allowed us to do is create an input system and an assessment process for each of the plans that creates a unique program for each individual according to the assessment that you create. So not only does it place you into a certain level according to the assessments that you put in, but it also will dictate that individual plan according to what your assessment numbers were. And we base it around a strength component as well as a mobility component. So if you're lacking mobility in a particular area, the plan will notice that and give you more mobility work in certain areas so that your plan is unique to your particular weaknesses and strengths. So it is very much a unique program in terms of how it creates the plan specific to the individual according to the assessment.
Badass, man. Kudos to you guys for creating that. I know how much goes into that.
Yeah, it's no joke. You know, it was a couple of years in the making, and you know, we're still working through some kinks, as you would imagine. You know, there's always kind of little flaws that we're trying to make better for the users, but we believe it's going to be something pretty unique as it starts to grow and we get more programs in there.
That's awesome. And you guys have about 250 plus camps planned coming up. Tell us about those.
Yeah, my God. I just got back from Malaysia last night, and it's endless, and it's a very cool thing because we you know, the fact that people around the world are starting to recognize and want us to come out is a good thing, and we want to help continue to build the brand of Power Monkey. Clinics are, you know, 1 and 2 day options that we have for a lot of people where, you know, we'll fly out and we'll do kind of a a la carte kind of version depending on what a particular gym is interested in doing, whether that be maybe only gymnastics or only handstand or only lifting. We kind of cater it to what the community in that particular area is looking for. And then we have a couple other events that are kind of a little bit more well known. We have our Power Monkey Camp, which has grown, and we're getting into our 5th year. This will be our Camp 9 and 10 in 2018. And that's a really, really unique event, and I highly recommend anyone who's into the fitness world to check it out. Just powermonkeycamp.com. It's a full week event. People show up on Sunday, they leave on Saturday, and we take care of the rest. You show up to this location in the middle of Tennessee. It's a 150-acre campus. We have a 32-acre lake, 30,000 square foot of gym space, cabins, a kitchen where Rosie Joe cooks meals for us the entire week. It's absolutely incredible. We bring in some of the best coaches, clinicians, and guest athletes in the world to come and train. And it one of the things that kind of we get a lot of questions about is they see, you know, Katrin or Matt Frazier coming to work out at our camp, and they're like, oh my God, like, well, if they're there, that means it's not for me. They're there as guests. Camp is meant for beginner and intermediate level athletes. We've created a camp around trying to get this basic and foundational level understanding out to the masses. And those people just show up to be able to work with us. They're not there in the same way that our campers are there. So we want people to understand that even though they're in the promotional materials, it's very much meant for people of all ages. We've had people from, you know, 16 all the way to 70 plus years old come out from all corners of the world. We had 17 countries represented last camp, 100 campers, 50 coaches, guest athletes, and staff. And it's about 150 people total. And it's absolutely worth the time. I can't say enough about it. I mean, I know I'm trying to promote here, but I guarantee you that if you are all interested in this world, that camp would live up, if not exceed, your expectations in terms of what something like this is about.
Hell yeah, man. I've heard multiple coaches and elite level athletes have nothing but amazing things to say about the camp. So I hope to make it out one of these days.
Yeah, man,
for sure.
You can never make it out. We definitely love to have you. It's the next one's going to be in May 6th through the 12th. It also is part of CrossFit's continuing education program. It offers 30 units, which is, I think, the most that CrossFit offers for any one particular event. You can get 30 units for the week. It's badass. You know, we got everything there. We got yoga in the mornings. Then we do gymnastics sessions all throughout the day, weightlifting sessions. We have endurance training with Chris Hinshaw and Tiffany Parker come out to do the sprinting and endurance component. Dave Newman from RX Jump Ropes with Joe Craig, they come to do a jump rope clinic. Jeff Martone and Zach Feiler do our kettlebell portion. We do a VO2 max testing with XFit Lab. Rika Geiser, who's a games competitor and Olympic athlete, does our rowing portion. It's endless. We do video analysis at night. We do seminars with Ben Bergeron and competitive excellence and that kind of stuff at night. It's like Disneyland for someone who's into the fitness world.
It's pretty man. Badass.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. Sweet. So what's your website? Where can they find out more about all of these things you're talking about?
Yeah, powermonkeyfitness.com would be the website. Social media is kind of where we're based a lot of times. If you want to go on Instagram, that's a lot of places where you'd be able to find kind of what's going on. Just Power Monkey Fitness is also our handle on Insta. And Power Monkey Camp would be the camp specific site, but you can get there through our fitness website as well. So that's where you can find most of the information. If people have any questions specifically for me, they can either direct message me on Instagram at Dave Durante or just email dave@powermonkeyfitness.com.
Hell yeah, brother. Thank you so much for your time, man. This was phenomenal.
Yeah, I appreciate the time, man. Thank you very much for having me on.
Have a great day.
You too, buddy.